My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Audio.
It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Coming up at 6:30, why have teams chosen to de-emphasize the preseason so much? We did a lot on Take Command this morning about that, as well as some obviously, some raw, guys that actually did play discussion, but we'll give you that at 6:30. Right now, just after 6 o'clock on a Monday, it's the last time we do this preseason version. Who were the 6 players we looked at Friday that we are most interested in for the Commanders Patriots, and how do they do on a Monday? Well, that will do in regular season as well, and last preseason version right now, a Monday edition of the Pick 6.
The 6 biggest Commander storylines. Delivered at 6 o'clock sharp. It's the Pick 6 at 6.
We set out to find a leader, someone who could take this franchise to the next level, build an elite team that consistently competes for championships.
All righty. We picked 6 players who we were really interested to watch and we thought could be intriguing in terms of their effect on the rest of the roster. And Anthony, you started with...
Number 1. Martavis Bryant. Good choice. To be honest, I think all of our picks were pretty good.
We're basically savants.
Yeah. I started out with Martavis just because, again, they signed this guy in the offseason. They gave him another chance. Dan Quinn, he also, spoke about his journey in the post-game presser. But being able to see Martavis go out there, catch a touchdown, all the, players surround him and, encourage him and just congratulate him on having scored his first touchdown in over 7 years, was pretty inspiring. But also the things that he did throughout the game, he was able to draw a defensive penalty.
Two DPIs.
So I think this game necessarily didn't seal his fate, in terms of, making the roster, but it did show us, he still has something left in the tank. And I think that's what Adam Peters and, Cliff Kingsbury, Dan Quinn, that's what they wanted to see out of the guy. And I think he did he went out there and, he played solid.
I totally agree. I think I do not think he will make the roster.
Yeah.
I would not be surprised if they took a flyer on him. And we're just like, we think he can do this against dudes. The problem is he's probably your 6th receiver. And does your 6th receiver not playing special teams actually wind up being active on game day? And so they could keep him and just make him inactive on game day. The other 5 are the guys that are going to be, up and playing offense and playing teams. And, if someone gets hurt, then he's on your roster. You don't have to call him off the practice squad. You don't have to protect him. Because the other, one of the things that we didn't talk about during the roster projection is you have 4 practice squad players you can protect every single week where other teams can't poach them. But he's a guy that, he's someone else is intrigued. Could they poach him? Could Dallas be like, we saw him last year too. We're intrigued. Like, I don't know. I could make the case that a dude who's 6'4", 210 pounds, a former first-round pick, and still has shown the ability to do some of the things that got him drafted there and was productive early in his career before his life took a turn, now that he's turned back around, is worth keeping. I just think that he's also doing this against not number ones. And so you got to earn your way up. And in the name of competition, I don't think he did that in his time here, even though we did a lot of stuff right. He just didn't have time to climb the ladder. They didn't give him time to climb the ladder because there's other guys that had deserved it ahead of him. So I think Brian's super interesting. I'd probably keep him around on the practice squad. I think having that body type to practice against is great, especially in a division where AJ Brown exists. So with that, that's kind of where I'm at on Brian. I think they're going to go thin at receiver. And I think the other thing to watch out for him, unfortunately, is like if another guy who's big and physically gifted winds up getting cut, they could also put in a waiver claim as well.
Number two,
Tyler Owens. All he did was continue to be the exact same Tyler Owens that we saw at camp, Anthony. It's easier to move on if you want to from Derek Forrest now than it was before this last game, because are you concerned that, oh man, if Owens gets out there for real, like, are we going to regret not having Defoe? And maybe, and you know, if you can keep Defoe around on the practice squad, like, that's a really good, solid, he's one of the better practice squad players in the NFL. Like, this dude was a starter 2 years ago and he wasn't a bad one. Like, Owens is a last line of defense. He's made a couple of touchdown-saving tackles. He has been a monster on special teams. Like, this dude's going to not only make the team, at the very least on special teams he's going to play, and he's the kind of guy that if I'm Joe Witt Jr., I'm like, I might find a role for you. And certainly, you know, he's an undrafted free agent rookie. These guys don't come in and become all pros or pro bowlers or anything, and he's probably not even going to play a whole lot. But he... there's a lot of talent there. And a year from now, even they signed Chin to a one-year deal. If Chin is awesome, then you'd probably just be like, oh, Jeremy Chin is great. He's a former defensive rookie of the year. But like a year from now, if Tyler Owens has replaced Jeremy Chin and is the starter next to Quan Martin, like that's a plausible storyline with how good of a camp this dude had.
Yeah, definitely. Just wanted to see him be consistent. And I think that's exactly what he did. And again, you're right. He did go out there and make another touchdown-saving tackle on the running back. I'm just like, good gracious. So the fact that you have a short tackler out there, you know, he's consistent. He's adhering to the scheme. I think, you know, he did just enough, or, you know, what we wanted to see him do throughout the entirety of the camp.
More than enough. He's safely on the team.
Yeah. Number three.
Can't say the same about this dude. Anthony, your second choice was?
Oh, Kazmir Allen. I had clicked over on accident. Yes, Kazmir Allen was the second guy just because going into, you know, the final preseason game, we felt as though the training staff moved this guy around throughout all of camp. Start out as a receiver or strictly a punt returner, kick returner, transition over to the running back room. So obviously they see this guy as, you know, a guy that can be a playmaker. And, you know, in this final preseason game, throughout the preseason, he just didn't make enough plays or any really splash plays. So that's why, you know, he was our third guy in this pick six.
Yeah, I mean, you got Cliff last week being like, oh, this is a Deebo Samuel type of role potentially for him. Like, we could see him taking handoffs. We could see him in the backfield. We see him as a receiver. And sometimes, like, with Deebo, you do that because he can do everything. He truly can. Sometimes versatility is a sign of he's actually not that good at any of them, but like he should be, and we're trying to find a place. And that's kind of Kazmir Allen. Like he's a twitched up athlete. He definitely made some plays at UCLA, but at the NFL level, the level of twitch you need is different. I don't know that he's got like NFL twitch, right? Superior NFL twitch. If you're just as athletic as everyone else, that means you're one of the, you know, top 1% of athletes on earth,
yeah,
which is a sweet, sweet athletic thing to be. I would love to be that. So I'm not hating on it, but you're not going to have your athleticism let you separate and make plays to warrant a playmaker position. I just think if you're going to be a playmaker, you got to make plays. And Kaz Allen didn't make plays. And in fact, he had a fumble and missed some stuff. So, yeah, I'm out on the Kaz Allen experiment, at least for
number four,
a roster spot. Number four, Javonte Jean-Baptiste. He was good again. He was solid. Like, he sets a good edge. He rushes smartly. He's got a little bit of pass rush savvy to him. He doesn't get washed to the frequency that, like, say, Jamin Davis does. Is Jamin still learning the position? Jamin's obviously got some tremendous other attributes. I think they've made it really, really hard at that spot. I think that they're dedicated to the Jamin Davis experiment. I also think if they got the right trade offer that they would probably be smart to like, if you say, hey, a bunch of stuff has to go right for this to work out, or I can get guaranteed a whatever round pick with 1 year left on the contract, you might just take the trade and be like, hey, we tried and we wish you the best. We hope that the things that we taught you help you in your next endeavor on a human level. But when we did our 53, we had both of them on. We had Jean-Baptiste on, we had Davis on, just they're heavy at defensive line. And I'm okay with that for right now, because I also think they want to rotate those dudes a ton. They want to use some of them inside as three techniques, as we saw KJ Henry in this game. And I think you'll see Dorrance Armstrong do some of that as well amongst that top line with, you know, Dante Fowler, or Cleveland Furl inside, and Jamin outside, or Jean-Baptiste outside. So they're, I don't know, man, like, they've got that. That is one of the hardest position groups, I think, to divvy up, because there's a bunch of guys that are pretty even. I mean, Andre Jones Jr. as well had a couple of nice rushes last night. And you're like, I get it. I just don't know how many of them actually wind up making the team. And for Jean-Baptiste, as a seventh round pick, it feels like he could be someone who slid. Certainly Andre Jones, you know, we didn't put him on the practice squad earlier because we kind of, we're trying to move a little faster through the 53, but he's one that I'll go back and add to the practice squad for our official list, if you will. But yeah, man, I would say Jean-Baptiste is a guy that I have on, but if they try to sneak into practice squad, it won't surprise me. And that's not reflective of anything more than numbers compared to, like, his play.
Yeah, nah, I definitely think he had a couple of good pass rushes. But again, like you said, like, these guys, like, I would say, would you say KJ Henry's probably above them?
Henry's definitely above them.
He had some really good rushes yesterday.
He did, and he's been consistently better. He was a higher draft pick.
Yeah.
Which, again, like, not to say that that is indicative of, like, oh, they have to keep him because of the draft capital. Just, like, he's a better player.
Yeah. They also had
Which is why he was drafted higher.
They also had him lining up at the D tackle, which was also interesting. So, you know, looking at that versatility is also pretty inspiring too. So,
yeah, for sure. So I think that Jean-Baptiste, Davis, Jones are kind of battling for, in an ideal world, one spot, but we had it as two. I mean, it also depends. Like, it actually isn't that hard to make it two, especially if you don't do what we did, which is put Ridgeway and Mathis both on the roster.
And not keep an extra running back or...
Yeah, no, you know, three running backs. Yeah, we went like real light at linebacker, just four of them with McGee being on IR. I mean, that's another factor, right? Is like, if Jordan McGee's on IR, that's a spot. If Jordan McGee's not IR because he's going to be ready for week one or even week two, well, that's a spot that you don't have available. So it is... Man, these number crunches get real, real crunchy, which brings us to...
Number five.
Cole Turner, Anthony. What did you see from Cole Turner?
Cole Turner, to be honest, I thought he had a bad game. But I will say, in the first and 10, when you broke down, you know, the drops, one might not have been his fault because he thought it was zone and he might have been correct. And, you know, Jeff Driscoll might have got it wrong. And then the holding penalty, that was really bad. But outside of that, the big catch down the middle of the field, again, showing his versatility. And I think that's ultimately why, you know, Ron Rivera and them chose to get him. He's a big target. He can run. So he was able to, you know, display that. But, again, I think you summed it up perfectly. A mixed bag.
Yeah. Something Dan Quinn said, I think it was Friday, and then reiterated post-game Sunday night, is sticking with me with Cole Turner. And I don't know how to apply it, but I know that it's relevant. So Dan talked about how we know there's going to be some guys that just, like, kind of grind their teeth because they're so amped up for this game. You know, like, it, your career's kind of on the line, which means you're going to stress out about every single down, every single assignment, every block, every catch, and especially when you have a chance to make catches. Like, oh my God, I got this is my shot. I'm the primary here. Like, am I going to get the ball? I got to catch it. Like, you can't play football well that way. And Dan talked about that on Friday, saying, like, this is probably going to happen. And our message to the guys is, like, just relax and play. Like, we know what you can do. Like, now go show it. Because he wants them to play well. He wants to judge them based off of their best. And then, sure enough, on Sunday, the first half, they're tighter than hell. And DQ goes in at halftime. And he's like, hey, broskies, just play. And that message was then relayed via the press conference afterwards so that we all know that it happened. And sure enough, in the second half, the talent obviously evens out. You got the end of the Patriots roster versus the end of the Commanders, and you saw how that went, as opposed to the Commanders backups hanging very well with the Patriots starters. But you also just have guys playing looser, playing faster, playing more physical. There's a different crispness to the second half of that game for Washington in all fronts, and Cole Turner's one of those guys. He goes out and makes that play that he maybe doesn't make in the first half. And so my question, my inability to process this, Anthony, is do they look at it as in that Cole Turner learned his lesson? If he just goes out and plays, he's going to be fine. And we think Cole Turner playing is really valuable to us. Or, hey, we told you guys, don't play tight. And you did anyway. And we can't trust you when the lights are on. And that's actually part of the evaluation. Who's a gamer and who's not? And I think that you could make an argument over the past couple of years that Cole Turner's just not a gamer. He's a dude who plays pretty well in practice a lot.
Yep.
And then in the games, you got critical mistakes. And that's multiple years running. And so I don't know what to make of that. If they think they can coach that out of him, and, you know, I do think that's something that is coachable, by the way, right? Like, there is some of it, some people that have it supernaturally, you're always just going to be able to rely on in a way that's different. But I do think for more fringe type guys, if you can give them the tools they need to feel confident, that actually is one of the arts of coaching. So I do think it's possible. And if they think they can do that to Cole Turner and it's worth it, okay. I would probably just rather look at Colson Yankoff and be like, this dude's been a gamer consistently. He's still getting better. He's super raw, but he's actually not that far different from Cole Turner right now. I know he can't grow, and Cole Turner's ginormous, and they're different body types in that way. So that is points to Cole Turner, but I don't know what to make of that. The fact that Dan Quinn kind of called his shot, Turner is the walking epitome of it. And then what do they do with that information? I have no idea how they see that.
Yeah, I mean, Dan and Cliff both already understand that, you know, tight end, safety, those two positions are the toughest to monitor right now. So I think the preseason finale was an indictment of that. I think after halftime, if they just assess Cole's play after that, then, you know, he'll be in good standing. But again, you necessarily can't trust it if, you know, you're tight, you know, the first half, and I got to tell you, loosen up.
Like, right. We can't be doing that once we get in the regular season. I need you to just play. Yeah. I need you to come off. You know, all of a sudden, Zach needs a blow, and we're in a two tight end set on a third down, and this is something we want to, you know, the tight end's one of the primaries. I can't hesitate on the play call because I'm like, shoot, I don't know if Turner's going to, you know, psych himself out. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that's exactly what happened to Cole Turner. Cole Turner might be listening right now. Hi, Cole. And being like, that's not how my brain works, guys. Like, I hate you. You're dumb radio people. And like, okay, fine. But DQ said it about someone, and it certainly seemed like Turner was one of those guys that fit the bill. Mm-hmm. And it's been, again, multiple years where in game, it just hasn't been as good. It hasn't been as productive. There's been big mental blocks, mental mistakes. So for whatever the reason is, you can't, as Cliff Kingsbury, be like, oh, shoot, I don't know if I can trust Turner here on a big third down in week three where Ertz, you know, he's run two vertical routes in a row and needs a blow and it's third down. Like, I can't have that. And so I don't know what they do there. All right, last but not least.
Number six.
We had Tariq Castro Fields. We kind of said it's Castro Fields, it's Chigozie Anuseum, and those two guys at corner are battling with Defoe at safety. And for Castro Fields versus Anuseum, advantage TCF. Anuseum had a couple of rookie moments. I think he's 100% on the practice squad. Like, they like his physicality. They like his size. He just needs more polish. He was an undrafted free agent for a reason. You think of the two-minute drill. Chig is in coverage on the sideline. Like, you have to make a tackle and keep a guy in bounds. And instead, he whiffs. Guy gets extra yardage and gets out of bounds. Like, those are the kinds of things that, unfortunately, are the margins between making a team and not. While Castro Fields, he's got a couple balls that kind of go over his head to receivers that are overthrows, but you're in good phase there. Like, you're not that far from the receiver. You're forcing a tough throw over you that's got to be a perfect drop in the bucket. Like, that's actually not bad coverage. And some of those are even second reaction plays where May breaks the pocket and is throwing down the field. What I don't know is on the big touchdown that got called back because the Patriots are incapable of lining up correctly, where Defoe winds up being the last guy back there. Like, I don't think that's Defoe's guy. I think he's coming from a middle third safety, and I want to know who blew coverage on that side. So if that was Castro Fields, that's obviously not going to help his case. But he's also been a good special teams player. I think he probably winds up making the roster. But I'm also open to other ideas, including someone who hasn't been in Washington for the entirety of the offseason, Anthony.
Who have you looked at? Oh, are you talking about just picking somebody up off the waiver?
Yeah, waiver wire.
Oh, I thought
I wasn't saying anyone in particular.
I'm like, hold on now.
I wasn't saying any. Was there someone that you? I mean, Stephon Gilmore got signed, so.
Yeah, he did get signed.
That would have been theoretical.
Wasn't happy about that.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I'll say real quickly about that, I'll just tag this on the end here. I think the way they've approached free agents is different because they know it's a developmental year, right? If you're trying to win this year, are you a better football team with Stephon Gilmore than you are without Stephon Gilmore? Yeah, even with he's not in his prime anymore, but I think he's better than what they've got. Certainly better down the depth chart than what they've got. However, you're trying to figure out how good you got it right now. You're trying to get Forbes reps. You're trying to get BSJ reps. And because of that, if you bring Gilmore in, they can't play. And so in this year where they're trying to figure out exactly what they need for next year, they need to actually do the figuring out. And so if they were 3 years from now and we're talking about, hey, we're a little thin at corner, but we think if we can get it straightened out, we're a Super Bowl contender or we're an NFC East Division contender, then you go sign Stephon Gilmore. This year, when the more important question is not can we win the division, but is Emmanuel Forbes good? Is he an NFL player? Is BSJ worth re-signing? Mm-hmm. Then you can't afford to give those snaps to a veteran. And frankly, Gilmore might also have not been interested, right? There's always that possibility that he wants to go to a contender. But that's where we're at, I think, with some of the rep distribution and some of the positions where it feels like they maybe could have been more aggressive in free agency. And they have a bunch of young guys they're trying to figure out. You kind of got to do the figuring out and give those young players space to figure it out.
Nah, I definitely agree.
All right. Stop and Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And when we get back, why has the NFL de-emphasized the preseason so, so much? Logan and I discussed this morning on Take Command. We share it with you next here on the Team 980.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Audio.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And the preseason has become quite de-emphasized in the NFL. And that was actually, I think, one of the more interesting things that we talked about today on the Take Command podcast, which is out now in full. We did a solid 30 minutes of analysis of a, I won't call it a meaningless, but a de-emphasized preseason game in terms of who we thought helped themselves and not. And you can check that out starting at the top of the hour. Because, well, then our show will be over. And I prefer you to listen to this show while it's live because that's good for my job security. Speaking of job security. But why has it become so de-emphasized? That's where we started Take Command podcast. And it was a really interesting conversation with Logan Paulson. So we want to share it with you here on The Hoffman Show.
It's time to take command with former NFL tight end Logan Paulson and former Commanders beat reporter Craig Hoffman.
Monday morning on Take Command after the preseason has finished on Sunday Night Football. The Commanders won 20-10. That's cool. Winning is better than losing. Yeah. But Logan Paulson, we are not going to talk a whole lot about the specifics of the game because I would hope that's obvious to everyone listening why we're not going to talk about so much of the specifics of the game. No schematic breakdowns, no inside third down, this or that. We will spend some time, obviously, as we get going here on the players that perhaps made or cost themselves in terms of the roster. But there's a couple of bigger picture things we wanted to talk about first here on Take Command to frame that discussion. And we will talk about in a moment, Logan, waiting, you know, last night's game versus the other games versus what we've seen in practice. And that's going to obviously shape, you know, trying to guess what Adam Peters is going to do in terms of, oh, hey, that guy had a great camp, but a bad finish. What does that mean? So we'll get into that in a moment. But I wanted to start even bigger than that, Logan, as we wrap yet another NFL preseason where fewer and fewer teams are really treating this, the public-facing games, if you will, the ones that are on television opposed to the joint practices, et cetera, with any level of competitiveness, seriousness. And serious isn't the exact right word because it's serious for the guys that are out there. It's serious for the coaches while it's happening. But clearly, they are not valuing the preseason the way that it was, even when you were playing, nevertheless, how it was 20, 25 years ago. And this kind of really hit me hard last night when I got a tweet from, I think it's at DC Pac-Man, who was like, why isn't Emmanuel Forbes playing? And my first instinct was to be like, because haven't you noticed none of the starters are playing? And Emmanuel's a starter, very clearly, on this team. And then I was like, you know what? It's actually a more valid question than that. Because Emmanuel's a young player who's they're trying to get more reps. And this is an opportunity to get reps, especially with New England playing their ones last night. And they didn't do that for basically anybody of their starters. 34 players not playing last night. I'd say those 34 all are going to make the team, and yet they don't think any of them could use the extra reps. Don't want to risk the injury, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm just curious for you, Logan, to kind of kick us off here. Like, what do you like? Is this a missed opportunity that teams, not just the Commanders, but league wide? Are missing, or is preseason actually not that valuable? And maybe there's a reason why teams are doing it this way more and more.
I mean, I think preseason is extremely valuable. I think when you look at the first two games specifically, I think you see kind of the reactions coming out of those games and the questions in the media and the answers and the responses. I think, you know, that was the first time we kind of got sniffs of, like, you know, Jahan maybe wasn't meeting the standard, and that happened in a preseason game. And obviously that's reflective of what we were seeing in practice, but that's an important element, right? When guys get on the field, it looks a little bit different. It feels a little bit different. And I think you see that in the preseason games. I think also with the Emmanuel Forbes stuff, like coming out of that, you know, kind of how he was able to refocus for the week in Miami. I think all that stuff, the genesis of that is the joint practice with the Jets and then the preseason game. So I think it is valuable. I think it's just what you're using it for. And I think a lot of fans think, you know, like everyone should be playing all the time. And that's kind of what this team did last year. And there isn't, I don't know if there's a huge benefit to doing that. I think if you've gotten what you've needed to get out of it, then move on. You know, and I think with the three-game structure, in the bye week leading into the season, I think every team is handling it a little bit differently. So, for example, like Carolina didn't play any of their starters until the third preseason game. And so they're like kind of they're ramping for the third preseason game. And then they go. The same thing with New England, right? You kind of ramp, everyone plays, and then you have that bye week to kind of make sure you're right and go from there. So I think it's more of a preference thing. And I think some people are treating it as they would a traditional preseason, you know? But if you think about it, the third game was the game that you'd be really getting after. And then the bye week would be the next week. So I think it's just preference. I think it's just style. I think it's just, you know, for this team, it seems like they use it as an evaluation tool. And once the evaluation in their minds is kind of finalized, they prioritize the safety of the roster and playing things close to the vest. So.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, though, the concept of like, oh, is the preseason just an evaluation tool or is it a preparation tool? Like, is this something that gets you ready for the season in a way that you can't in practice or that enhances what you're doing in practice? And I think the disconnect between maybe where the league is and where fans are is the game planning element of it.
Yeah.
That you are actually getting less out of preseason games. I know that might sound crazy, and I think it might also be position specific too, though, because like you don't get a chance to practice tackling in like tackling to the ground, real tackling, actual other human beings who are trying to make you miss tackles in practice. Like you practice tackling stability balls and you know, dummies and pads, and you rally to the ball, but you don't actually finish. Like, it's just different. And so defensively, I could see like, hey, I want to go chance to practice making some tackles. But I think the lack of specificity in the game plan means the mental preparation side, it's not reminiscent of what you see during a regular season game. And thus, it's at, like the quality of practice and thus the return, or the quality of preparation, thus the return on the investment of time is not worth the risk of injury. And I know that's frustrating for fans because you want to see your guy, like you want to see, hey, how's this guy coming along? Or I just want to watch this guy play football because I'm a fan. And that's you know, what fandom is. But I also, you know, understand it from the team side. And it seems like more and more teams are leaning that way. And the more teams that do it, the more valid it becomes, because you don't get what the Commanders had for an opportunity last night, which was actually playing against New England's ones. Like, that could have been more valuable than playing against, you know, obviously their twos and threes. But you're still not getting any kind of game plan stuff. So I have to just like defer to you and defer to people in the league to realize like what the gap is between game plan specific type of offense and defense that you're playing against versus these vanilla versions, because oh my god, they are very vanilla. But I don't know if there's a way to like quantify it so that folks can understand the difference in preparation level when you're going against a preseason offense versus like a regular season offense if you're a defensive player.
Yeah, I mean, defense or offense, you know, it's the same thing. And so what I will say is what I think they've done here, and a lot of teams do this, especially with new coaching staffs, is you kind of put your vanilla offense in. So one reason you do that is because you want to make sure that you're playing all your cards close to the vest. You want to make sure that you're allowing the athletes on the field to play fast and play physical, and so you can really flesh out your evaluation. We just talked about that. But as a player, I will tell you the most anxiety giving thing in terms of preparation is not who you're playing on the field. It's unscouted looks. It is a nightmare, because so much of what you do in the NFL is you watch film, you find the looks that they run, you find the pressures they bring, you understand the patterns of route combinations, you understand in this look with this tight end set, they run this run. And so when you're going up against an opponent, especially week one, I remember being so stressed, like watching film from 3 years prior of a coordinator trying to figure out like what they might be doing, you know, reading camp reports. Like, this is me and like talking with coaches, like we'd read camp reports and be like, oh, they seem to be in a 3-4. It's like, oh, that's a departure from what they did in, you know, 2017 or whatever. You know what I'm saying? And so I think the schematic advantage of not showing stuff is almost impossible to like quantify. Right. We have an idea of what Joe Witt Jr. is doing, but even what he's done in preseason is pretty drastically different from what he's shown in practice. And I'm pretty sure what he's shown in practice is even farther removed from what he showed in joint practice. So the version of the defense you're seeing is like literally the bare bones. Now, what you're saying in terms of preparation tool, it's an extremely valuable preparation tool. Like, and in the sense that like going to the stadium, putting on your pads, going through the warm-up, it sets the table for the season in a way that nothing else in the preseason does. Like nothing else in the preseason does. And so I do think that there is value there. Now, in terms of saying we want to really see how this cover three beater, you know, works against the New England Patriots ones, it's not real. It's not real until it's the game, because they're not running it the way they're going to run it. They don't have all their checks in, because they game plan their cover three to match you. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not, until the game planning becomes involved, it's not NFL football. It's a preparation tool. It's an evaluation tool for the guys. And I think there's an element of like, you talk about like, we talk a lot about like physical preparedness because of the strength coach stuff that we do on the side. The preseason is an elevation of the offseason. It goes practice, joint practice, preseason game, because the lights are on, you're going against somebody else, and it's as close to 100% as you can go in that environment. So I think that it's important for those things, but the teams, they're not going to show you everything. They're going to play it really tight because it's so important for success in the regular season, especially early on.
Yeah, and I guess that's the thing that I was curious about is like how much of a physical preparation, practicing the technique, practicing, you know, even simplified versions of the mental reads, I guess, so the mental as well, how much of that could you get in a preseason setting versus, you know, having to wait for the regular season? And it sounds like it's actually not that much. And it's not even not that much. It's the difference between that and practice is not that much. And at that point, what kind of risk do you want to take on where there are tackles to the ground and like more randomness into it if you're not actually going to get that much sharper? And also, I think, you know, last night was interesting because you had guys play, you know, the snap counts aren't up yet because we're recording this in the morning and the game didn't end till midnight or whenever it ended. I don't know. I watched the second half back this morning because I sure as heck didn't watch that full thing. I know you were there. So
I was there. Yeah.
I got a text from you at 2 a.m. about the podcast today, which I read at 7 a.m. when I woke up this morning. So I know it went pretty late. But point is, like, if we're talking about 20 reps for some guys or 15 reps for some guys, maybe 30, 40, like how much are those 30, 40 reps even valuable over the hundreds of reps that you've stacked in training camp? And at that point, when you look at kind of the scope and size and relativity of all of that, I don't know that you're actually going to be able to move the needle that much. And at that point, you're getting into the risk reward game. And I think the other thing too, later in the preseason, because like the Carolina example, I think is really interesting because my strength coach brain, since you brought it up, goes, I would rather ramp into the season. Yeah. But if I have someone who gets hurt earlier in camp or earlier in the preseason, I have more time to go find something else or work out a trade or whatever. Now, if something happens to you, like if God forbid Jacoby Brissett was, you know, they said ultimately like he could have gone back into the game last night, but let's say like he gets knocked out. Yes, they would just be like, okay, Drake May's our starting quarterback, but then what do you do down roster? Do you go find another backup? Do you want to bring in another veteran? Like, you don't have a lot of time to do that, as opposed to if it happens in the first week of camp or the first preseason game, you have more time. So that is the explainer as to why I think teams do it, where they have more time to come up with plan B versus, oh, crap, cuts are tomorrow. I guess we'll just find someone on the waiver wire.
Yeah, no, 100%. And again, I think it's a little bit, people are trying to figure out the right way, the right path. And there is no right answer. Cause like you said, from a physiological standpoint, you want to ramp into the season, right? Kind of have that bye week, get right, and then get rock and rolling. But I think a lot of people look at it and what's comfortable for the players. Like, I remember I was talking to Fletch last night on the radio and I was like, would you like to, you know, not play early and then play the one before, like play this third game and then go? And, you know, what he's comfortable with is playing early in the preseason. He's like, no, I don't want to play the week one and week two and then take week three off. And again, like, there's a psychological element to this. And I think like there's a psychological element for the coaches as well too. Like, I'm just comfortable with doing it this way because we've done it this way, you know, since preseason was invented, really. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of how we've done it, right? It was, you know, a little bit in the first game, like a quarter in the second game, a half in the third game, you're off for the fourth game. And I think there's like a rhythm to that for players mentally. And I think maybe as we get longer into this three-game preseason structure, I think it'll change. I think guys will say,
oh, it's going to change because it ain't going to be three for that much longer. They're going to go to an 18-game schedule and go to two. So, which will be fascinating in its own right. Yeah.
Yeah, which is wild. But yeah, so I think that's what you'll see is something. I think you'll see people fiddle with it just as they fiddle with the practice structure. And I think I can hear fans saying, because I've had this conversation with one of the producers on the shows I was working on last night about how insulated and protected the players are. But ultimately, like this, you're just trying to knock the rust off. Like I consult with a guy for a different team, and one of the things he's like, oh, you know, like I don't care how much I play, I just want to get the rust off. Just make sure that I'm in a game setting, I'm tackling, I'm on the ground, I'm off the ground, I'm working off blocks, because there's a little bit different of intensity. Like I can finish a block in a preseason game and no one's going to say pooey to me about it. Like, so I'll get a hearty hand clasp and good job. If you finish a block in practice, you're going to get cussed out because you're trying to protect your team, right? So I think there is a little bit different intensity to a preseason game, which again is like, it's instead of having to climb a mountain, you just kind of take it, you know, like climbing Everest. You take it to base camp one, base camp two, base camp three. This is what this is. So, I think this is, I know fans want a more intense, you know, use every opportunity to prepare, but there is a risk reward element here. And I think because of the advantage of keeping stuff close to the vest, because of the health and wellness of your team, like if you look at the teams that win the Super Bowl every year, they're the healthiest team. And again, you're yes. working through the season there. And so if you can set yourself up to be successful in that area, you give yourself a shot. So all of these things are in the goal of winning the Super Bowl. And it's just kind of what you prefer in terms of getting there. But don't get it twisted. The preseason is valuable, but it's not valuable maybe for what fans think it's valuable for. Does that make sense? Like,
Yeah. I think that's fair for sure. I think for some fans, because fans are not a monolith, Logan. I don't know if you know that.
That's true. Yeah, that was different. I shouldn't have said it like that. But like the fans that I've talked to maybe don't.
For sure. But I think for some people that are not in the league, there is that is 100% correct in terms of it's not what you think it's for. I think for others, it is exactly what you think it's for. You just might not get the value, the return on investment, if you will, that you think you do. And thus, that kind of mitigates the need to actually participate in it. So then, how does Adam Peters name the roster, and how did all the players who actually did play last night help or hurt themselves? That's The Rest of Take a Man, which is available on demand for you and your favorite podcast platform. We wrap up the Hoffman Show quickly next. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And Anthony, you said we have one thing in the real things folder. I'm gonna see how good is. I definitely want to play this, but I don't want to do it in a day that we're rushed. We're kind of rushed. Magic Johnson responding to Anthony Edwards. Delightful. Yeah. I did, by the way, so I just want to wrap up a couple of stories from the weekend / the show. One of our calls from last week, we posted up on social and it went viral on TikTok. I know something went viral on TikTok if Anthony sends me my own TikTok. That's what I know, like, 100,000 views, that's whatever. When Anthony sends me my own TikTok, I'm like, damn, that thing really made it.
I don't even use TikTok, so the fact that I got the TikTok.
Someone sent it to you?
Yeah, somebody sent it to me.
Nice. That's what we're talking about.
I don't even use it. And this is part of the reason I don't use TikTok. I found myself on TikTok for a good 15, 20 minutes just swiping up, looking through videos. So that's why I don't get on TikTok, because it's so addictive. They just have so many.
Their algorithm's good. Their algorithm's good. I'm not going to lie. It'll suck you in. But what I was going to say is, for some reason, the YouTube comments get to me sometimes where I'm like, I'm in it and I'm emotionally. TikTok comments, I just laugh at mostly. Man. I don't get too deep into the weeds. Like, it's much more of an emotionally removed experience for me. And so there was one comment that really made me chuckle, because also when something goes viral like that on TikTok, I literally can't keep up. And we've had a couple go like that on YouTube Shorts too or whatever, and it's hard to keep up with the comments. And all of a sudden, I click on something. I'm like, oh, we have 200 comments. I like to read a lot of comments. That's too many. But on TikTok, when something goes viral, like we're talking like probably thousands of comments, and I can't respond to them. So, but I'll see like some of the more recent ones. And someone who didn't like the Dotson trade was like, where's Magic Johnson at? How are we going to let his team burn? And I'm like, man, you really don't understand how any of this works, do you?
Oh, man, they thought Magic was about to be the savior?
Yeah.
Ah, interesting.
Interesting. Yeah, that's a good word for it, Anthony.
Yeah.
Interesting. The other thing, if you've been listening all show long, God bless you. We mentioned in the first break of the show, almost had a disaster in segment two today. So like most companies with at least decent, if not superior security practices, our company, Odyssey, cares a lot about, you know, the internal security of all the files and all the things, of course. And so on a employee basic human level, you have to change your password every quarter, basically. And so I changed mine over the weekend because I had to. And I logged in accidentally with my old password and it still worked on our computer today. But then it was like, hey, wait a second, we need new login credentials. So in the first break, I went to go like log out, log back in, and it locked me out. Like our engineer, thank God, shout out to our guy, Tom, was able to fairly quickly unlock my account. And thank God the stream didn't crash. My notes didn't crash. We were almost in a really, really bad way, Anthony.
Yeah, those are the days I hate. Those are the days you see me frustrated over here because I'll log in over there, and then as soon as I come into the studio, boom, I can't even get into my account for like 5 to 10 minutes.
I don't know how it let me in with my old password to begin with.
Yeah, I don't get it either.
But I'm like, okay. And then I was like, Tom, which one do I log in with? Do I log in with the new password? Or do I log in with the old password? He's like, the new one. And I was like, cool. And now we're here. And it still wants me to log in again for some reason. But I was like, I'm not falling for your tricks twice, Windows. So we're gonna shut everything down. We're going to log it out. And we're going to come back tomorrow. We'll promise we'll get back to real things tomorrow as well. And we'll have the roster. 4 o'clock tomorrow. Don't be late.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.